Say good morning to Racine Mayor Corey Mason. Thanks for sitting in with the library.
Yeah, it was great to do.
Yeah, you want to see where the city's money's going, and that's where it's going. Look.
It's a really great library. They do fantastic things down at the library. It's such a great community resource.
Every dollar's accounted for. The movie people say, we put the money on the big screen.
They just came out with a really great graphic showing what the return on the investment is to the community, of like, you know, what taxpayer dollars go to it, and the broader economic benefit and what that looks as. And it's, I think it's like a threefold, like, for every dollar we spend on it, the community gets $3 back in services and economic activity. So, you know, not only is it great community resources and edifying to, you know, create readers and bring great programs to the community, but it has a real positive impact on the economy as well.
Now, you said earlier we played Soul Man by Sam and Dave. I got to get this out before I forget about this.
Yeah, yeah.
And you played in a band in high school, but it wasn't like
middle school.
It wasn't a marching band. It was a rock band.
So I went to Walden for middle school, and Al Clausen was the director. I'm sure he's long retired now. It's been years since I've seen him. But at Walden at the time, the band was called HHB, which stood for Horicon Horn Band. The joke being, we sounded like a bunch of geese when we were first learning to play. But that year, at the beginning of the year, he had us all over for an event, and we watched the movie Blues Brothers. And this was a band that had like three vocalists and, you know, a rhythm section, you know, bass guitar, rhythm guitar, drums, the whole bit. He's like, we're gonna do the Blues Brothers soundtrack. And so that's what we did that year. And so, you know, we went to Florida to go perform it. But like, this wasn't like your normal sort of concert band sort of thing. It was like a legitimate rock and roll band. And we did the whole Blues Brothers soundtrack that year. It was a great experience.
And you played?
I played the saxophone.
Any good at it?
I was, yeah. You know, I played through college, actually. I haven't picked it up in years.
Had I known this, I would have made you bring it with you. Had I known this fun fact before you came in, I would have embarrassed you.
But that's what Soul Man being played this morning reminded me of. Like, oh, I remember we did this in band when I was in middle school.
Okay, I see orange barrels everywhere. Roads are being dug up. And this is for the lead pipe replacement. You're replacing all the lead pipes. Now, I actually, from my house to the street is a clay pipe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. We had it checked once. We had a camera scope through it. And he's in great shape. You got a couple of branches going through it, but no, he's in good shape. It's a clay pipe.
Wow. Not a lot of those left. We actually have some areas that still have wooden pipes, if you can believe it.
Yeah, I remember on 6th Street.
Yeah.
They had wooden, they dug it up, and all these wooden pipes, they're still in good condition.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
How long they last.
So what's going on with all these lead pipe replacements?
So the federal government has said, and rightly so, because it's not good for human consumption. It's particularly bad for young kids. If you've got lead pipes and if any of that lead leaches into the drinking water, it can be really bad for kids. Now, we treat the lead pipes with an additive that keeps it from corroding, but the federal government has rightly said, you got to get rid of those pipes. And so it's a mandate, but the good thing is there's also federal dollars to go along with it. So last week we learned that we were going to get a $40 million grant to do lead pipe removal. So that's an exciting opportunity for us. Instead of doing, you know, just a couple hundred lead pipes removed every year, which is what we've been doing for the last decade, it'll get us to a place where we can remove the remaining 12,000 pipes in the next 5 years. So it's an exciting opportunity to replace those lead laterals and those lead mains to ensure that people have safe drinking water.
What's it being replaced with?
Oh, that's a good question.
Are they plastic or what?
Yeah, that's a good question that I don't know. I would be guessing. I know they've talked about it in the Water Commission in terms of what the replacement is, but
asbestos pipe.
No. It will not be asbestos pipe. but a non-lead, non-toxic material for certain.
You know, it's hard to believe, but when I went to school, all the tiles in the ceiling were asbestos.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had
part of the reason taking the Y down took so long is we had to get rid of the asbestos. Yeah. Every time the DNR would come, oh, we found some more. And it's just, you know, but it has to be carefully treated and removed and put into special landfills to make sure it doesn't cause any more pollution. But if you think about it, the number of schools or hospitals or public buildings that, you know, for years just had asbestos everywhere.
We had asbestos shingles on the back of our house where I was growing up. And during the summertime, they were cool. So my friends and I used to come over and put our tongues on them. Well, this is asbestos shingles. We put our tongue. But back in the 60s, they didn't know anything. Yeah. So we used to put our tongue. Oh, it's cool. And we used to lick the shingles. It was asbestos. My dad had asbestosis because when he worked in big buildings in Manhattan, they had the pipes wrapped in asbestos. And when he took this the covering, it just spilled all over the place. Yeah. Yeah. But they didn't know anything. Back in the 50s, they didn't know anything about asbestos. Yeah. It's like cigarette smoking.
Yeah. You know, it does not burn. I mean, if you have asbestos anywhere in your building, like it really is an effective fire suppressant and retardant. Like it will not catch fire, but it's also terribly, terribly toxic.
Home repair law loans.
Yeah. So we have a home repair program that we're doing in now 5 neighborhood TIDs. And if you want to go to our website, you can see if you're in one of those neighborhoods. But we gave out over 400 grants last year to homeowners to do up to a $10,000 repair on their home, just to get their homes back up to code or to do an enhancement on their property. But, you know, one of the things we hear from a lot of people in the community is, like, you know, some of our houses are really, you know, falling on hard times. They don't look nice. The porches might not be safe. The roofs might leak. So this is a home repair grant program that we do through the neighborhood TIDs to create a funding source for people to be able to repair their homes. And it's good for the homeowners because it, you know, gets them to a place where it helps them out with the repairs that they need. And it's really good for the neighborhoods. It stabilizes the neighborhoods and, you know, removes blight and makes it a safer place for everyone.
What we did with our house was, now we have a house that's well over 100 years old. We pick one project a year,
yeah,
and we get that. And now I hire people to do it. I right. have a good contractor. I use one thing, you get that. Next year, we'll worry about the next thing. Yeah. And by the time you get done, you've got a new house.
Yeah.
It just takes a couple of years, but you can't do everything at once because you can't afford it.
That's true.
I have a neighbor who lives on Chatham, and he always asks me when you come in, ask him about this. The home loans. What is the, now for his home, I don't know what he makes. I have no idea what his finances are. How does he apply for a loan to get his house repaired?
So there's two programs on the home loan. You have to be in the neighborhood, but assuming your friend on Chatham is, it's between Melvin and Gould. And so Chatham runs through there. So assuming he's in that
neighborhood. No, he's south of Gould.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're south of Gould, you're not in that neighborhood. If you're not in that neighborhood, we have another program where you have to income qualify for the loans. And so you have to make under 80% area median income to qualify. And so we have sort of home repair loans for other parts of the community as well. So in some parts of it, it's not income-based to do the neighborhood TID grants, but in other parts of the community, it's like, hey, what about me? If you income qualify and make less than 80% of the county median income, which is most residents, you can qualify for it that way.
City of Racine Mayor Corey Mason in this morning, and we're talking about a whole bunch of items, but this one's a really big one. Anti-violence and nuisance properties. And I got to find out more about these nuisance properties because I had never heard of them before up until about 2 months ago when I got a press release from your office. And what is a nuisance property? What's going on in these places?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Sure. So we've had nuisance property ordinance on the books for a while. In the last round of the budget, we added some additional language into our ordinances, really put a little bit more teeth in it. But basically, a nuisance property can be classified a nuisance property for one of a couple of reasons. One is if you have multiple police calls and fire calls to the same address over and over again, you can be labeled a nuisance property, right? The other is if you have multiple building code violations, and you know, we have to keep coming back. It's like, look, you got to fix the roof, you got to fix the windows, you got to, you know, have this in a state of good repair so that people can live there and be healthy when they do. You can be a nuisance property that way. So, you know, a couple of the properties that we've, McMinn Tower is one of them. You know, just in the last couple of years, we've had over 800 police calls.
Now, where is that?
McMinn, it's sort of kitty corner from the library, actually.
Oh, I know where that is. Yeah.
But, you know, over 800 police calls to that same address.
800?
800 over the last couple of years.
What's going on in that building?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. So we have the police, when we declare you a nuisance property, the police chief sits down with you and says, look, you've got to come up with an abatement plan because we keep coming out here for the same purposes. You've got to do something here in the building to make it safe for everybody to live here. And it can't be that, you know, you're just going to call the police every time that there's a problem here. You've got to address the root problems. And so ideally we go through that, they correct the issues and we go through it. If they don't, they start to get fines every time the police have to come out and respond to a call. And then if that doesn't work, ultimately, you know, the potential under state law is the property could be put into receivership and somebody else would wind up owning the building.
Yeah, it's not going to change anything, though.
If somebody else owned it?
Yeah.
I think that's the idea, actually. If you get different, I mean.
Yeah, but crime is crime. I mean, the owner of the building can't control crime, can he?
Sure. So, look, if you have people who are always calling because, like, look, people are breaking into the building. Why don't you have security on the doors so people can't just walk in? Or why don't you have somebody at the front desk to make guests sign in so we know who's coming and going? Why don't we make sure that there's alarms on the doors when people come in and out on the stairwells to make sure that people aren't breaking in? There's things that they can do as property owners, and it is their responsibility, particularly in these properties that are federally subsidized housing, it is their responsibility to provide a safe and healthy place for those residents to live. That is their contract with the government. Like, hey, we're going to provide housing.
So this has to do with government subsidies for that.
Not direct. I mean, it's not.
It could be any home.
It could be. Yeah, it could be any multifamily. It could be an individual home. It could be a bar, right? I mean, so it could be any sort of things. I mean, we declared a bar a nuisance property just last week. But you as a landlord have a responsibility to have a safe and healthy
place. So it could be a business, too.
Sure. Sure.
So you want to take a drink of water?
Yeah.
You've been struggling with that ever since. I just want to make sure you get your water in there.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so a business, like a bar, people calling the police. How many? It's the number of times you have to go there.
Yeah. And so if we're going back to the same place over and over again, right? I mean, it's one of the definitions of insanity, right? Is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So for property owners, they do have a responsibility to make sure that the place is safe and healthy for their residents to live or for the homeowners to live in. So whether it's a giant gaping hole in the roof or not having running water or multiple police calls to the same address over and over again, you'll get declared a nuisance property. And then we want to work with you. It's like, hey, we need to do something differently here. So we're not, going out to the same place over and over again. Now, we do not count like domestic violence calls or, abuse calls or any of those other things. We want people to report in if they're victims of crime. We don't sort of count those kind of calls. But if we keep coming out to the same property and the management of the property is not doing what they're supposed to be doing to make it a safe and healthy place to live, you will get declared a nuisance property. And look, we hear from people all the time, like, what is going on in this neighborhood? What is going on with this property? Why, why can't you do something different here? And that's, what we do. So the police chief works with those property owners and says, look, let's come up with a plan so that we get different results.
Struggle to strength. Anti-violence. You're never going to get rid of crime. It's going to be, even in the wealthiest, most posh neighborhoods in America, there's break-ins.
Right. So I think this is actually part of our gun violence initiative. Right. And so, again, safe and healthy neighborhoods, it all sort of plays in the same thing, whether it's the home repair grants or going after, banned property owners and declaring them nuisance properties. But this is a little bit more of the prevention work. So we have this Department of Community Safety, and its job is primarily to prevent crime. We still need the police to solve crime and go after the bad guys when they do bad things. But we learned that we really need to not just fight crime, but fight the causes of crime. So what this Struggle to Strength program is about is just identifying people, young men who might be in a position where they're likely to be victims or perpetrators of gun violence, and does interventions with them. So they do these trainings where they just talk to people about, like, hey, how do you resolve conflict? Hey, what do you think your future looks like? Hey, what do you think this will mean? And so they had a graduation ceremony on Sunday at the Bryant Center, and Judge Mitchell came down from Dane County. He's an African-American judge there, and just gave a really powerful presentation to these young people. He went up there and he put his robe on, said, "All rise, the judge is here," and he went through, what he sees as part of his job as judge is making sure that the kids are treated fairly as they go through the system. If they need to be held accountable for bad actions, we should do that, but we need to make sure that people have access to the resources that they need and try to break the cycle of violence before it continues. And then he called one of the participants of the program up, and he took his robe off and he put his robe on the kid. And he said, someday you might be the judge, and someday it'll be your job to make sure that people are treated fairly under the law when they come to your courtroom. So it was a really powerful program and really, starts to ideally get people to see differently about what their future might look like. And, sometimes it feels like, boy, I can't change things, or this is just how things are, or this is just what violence might look like in my neighborhood. And this is really intended to disrupt that. So they had over, 70 people participated in the program, and it was a really great event. And so sometimes, again, we need to have the police do their job and solve crimes and arrest people when they do bad things. But it's a really good investment of time and resources to try to prevent those things before they even occur.
In our church, when people get baptized, young people, they do a testimony before they get baptized. And they've done some pretty bad things, and they're not that old. And they talk about their times with the police, their times with drugs. They turned themselves around.
Yeah.
They're not doing that anymore. So it is possible.
It is.
Just because you see a kid in trouble, you say, well, there's another one for the prison system.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that.
It doesn't. But But we've also found if you intervene with kids and their families earlier on, you really have got a better shot of taking those choices off the table and helping them make better decisions by giving them access to resources. Now, you need to do the other side of it, too. If you're going to do gun violence and commit gun violence against other community members, your consequences need to be swift and certain and severe, and we need to do that side of the ledger, too. But before we get to that, we should try to do everything we can to disrupt that so that young people really have a good shot at life and they're not ruining their lives or other people's lives with some bad decisions around.
Everybody makes mistakes.
They do. They do.
If Eve didn't take a bite of that apple, everything would be perfect. But unfortunately, she wanted to taste that apple. Okay, it's the most wonderful time of the year because the tax bills are coming in the mail.
Yeah.
Now, my neighbor got his. I didn't get mine yet.
So they all go out at the same time. I'm not sure why your neighbor got it.
I heard that if you don't get it within 8 days, then it's free.
Wouldn't that be great?
That's what I heard. Yeah. It's like that 30-minute delivery guarantee.
Sure. It's not a pizza delivery.
If you don't get it in 30 minutes, free. Right. Okay, now, I did hear somebody complain, my tax bill shot up, but not for City of Racine. It actually, property taxes for the City of Racine, the city part, went down. It's all the other stuff on there that increased.
So right? our rate went down, but some of the bill did go up. So we did pass a fire referendum this year for 9 firefighters. So we did add money. Voters decided to add money to the levy. So you might see an increase in the city portion of it because of that. Even though the rate is going down because the referendum passed to pay for those firefighters, you might see an increase. And then, you know, we also passed a school district referendum, which was there. And then as an extra bonus, the state legislature, in its wisdom, instead of sending money back to the schools, said, you know what, we're not going to give the schools more money this year. But if school districts want to raise property taxes even more, they can do that. We're going to give our taxes, this tax revenue, away to rich people who don't need it instead. And so you're seeing a pretty decent increase in property taxes this year, but mostly driven by those 2 referenda. And frankly, you know, Madison needs to do right by property taxpayers and actually send resources back to schools, back to cities, so we can provide these services without keep putting it all on the property taxpayer.
Well, I like my garbage being picked up. I like to have a firefighter standing by in case something happens. I want police standing by in case something happens. You got to pay for that stuff.
You do.
You want a library. You want services. You got to pay for this stuff. It's not free. You don't get a free meal every time you turn around. But I'm pretty happy. You know, I don't mind. You know, years ago, my brother lived on Long Island. His term property tax bill was $15,000.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And I look at mine and say, woo, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
You see some of these rich homes in America. They pay $25,000, $30,000 a year in property taxes.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, but you live in a rich neighborhood. You get, you know,
right.
Firefighters show up in Gucci shoes. I mean, you got to pay for that stuff. Yeah. Mayor, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you. And I don't think I'm back until next year. So I just want to wish everybody a happy Hanukkah and a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And just really encourage everybody to stay safe out there. And if I could just end with this, I also just want to really thank all the city employees who do great work to provide services, our police and fire department, all the folks in public works, all the folks at the library who do great things every day to serve this community. So thank you very much to them, and Merry Christmas, everyone.
The people who empty the trash, recycling, they're out on the coldest days of the year. They're out in the rain, the snow. If you find something, a gift card you can give them. I think the max is $20. And if you can find something like that, give it to them. It's just a show of appreciation for all the work you do. Yeah. Because I tell you something, I wouldn't want to do that job.
Yeah, it's tough work.
Yeah, it is. Merry Christmas to everybody in your staff. Nicholas, too, in your office, who always arranges all my stuff
absolutely.
Here.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, Nicholas, and everybody else there, and to your family. You got that window fixed?
We do.
Window's fixed.
The store? Yes, we do.
How about your arm? Is that all fixed?
It's straight now. It's all straight now.
So. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Everyone.